Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net, where I teach beginners the skills they need to get their first software development job, building Windows and web apps at the world's best companies as quickly as possible. So in this lesson, we're going to talk about the Hub App project template. If you're familiar with the Windows Phone at all, you have seen the Hub Control, which is featured in the Hub App project template, repeatedly. It's probably one of the most popular paradigms for navigation inside of the Windows Phone. And actually, this Hub App project template is so well put together, and it illustrates so many ideas that are crucial to understanding how to build real apps on the phone API that we're going to spend pretty much the remainder of this entire series just picking apart the various pieces of the Hub App template to understand how those pieces all come together to build a real app, how to modify that template to get it to represent data and ideas that we want. We'll build apps based on it. We're going to extend it and so on. And so this is no small feat, and that's why we're going to spend so much time investigating the Hub App project template from here on out. So let's go ahead and get started by creating a new project, and this time we're going to select the Hub App project template. And I'm going to give this the name Hub App Template and then click OK. And the very first thing that we want to do is run the app in the emulator to see what its baseline functionality is. Okay, so what we'll do is begin to navigate between the various panes or the various hub sections for the hub control. So you can see here we have the section one with a list of groups, and I'll use the mouse cursor to act like my finger to swipe over to the next section, or rather pane or hub section, okay, which displays a series of items with images that represent those items and a title as well. And I'll navigate past that to section three, where I see other items that are listed in a vertical format. And then I'll swipe to section four, where I see another listing of items, this time without any images next to them, just a title and a subtitle. And then I'll move on to section number five, which again displays items in a different format. And then finally back to section number one, where we see groups. So let's now drill down by tapping or clicking on one of the group titles here that are listed. And you can see within a given group, there are a number of associated items that are laid out here. And we can click a given item. Let's select item title two. And now we can see details about that given item. Now, in this case, there's nothing to show. They didn't completely flesh out this example. There is actually other information that they could have displayed. Another display of the image, of the lorem ipsum description text, the title, the subtitle, things of that nature. They just didn't do that here. But we can add that in pretty easily. Let's use the back button twice to get back to the hub, to the hub control. And now let's navigate from the hub control to an item. For example, I'll go to section number three and just click item title three. And you can see we're back to that, that descriptive page for a specific item. So use the back button one more time. Now what I want to do is kind of pair up what we see here in the application with what we can see in the background in our Solution Explorer. What are the XAML pages that make up the given views that we're looking at here? So first of all of these sections inside of this main hub control are all contained in this hubpage.xaml. We'll come back to that and spend a lot of time there for the remainder of the series. When we select an individual group from this section one list, you can see that it brings up this listing of the group and the associated items. That is from the section page.xaml. Furthermore, when we get into the detail for a given item, that is the definition for that's in the item page.xaml. All right, so that's how those are linked up. But I think more importantly, at least a high level, there's this association between groups and items. So in your mind, make sure you understand the hierarchy of data that we're working with. Groups, which will have data, And within a given, like, for example, one of the properties of a group is its title, all right? And so within a given group, there are a collection of items. And items have properties. We can see here that it has a title, a subtitle, a description, an image, and who knows, maybe there's some other information that describes an item as well. Now, groups and items, these are just dummy sample data that's provided to you to kind of get the creative juices flowing, to see how everything's wired up together. We're going to spend a lot of time looking at how that actually works, again, from here on out. So let's stop the execution of the app. And now let's open up our hubpage.xaml. And I'm going to go ahead and just get rid of the designer for a moment and focus on the XAML itself. I'm going to start rolling up sections. Like, I'm going to roll up this page.resources. We'll come back to that in just a moment. And then you can see that we have a grid, and inside the grid there is a hub. I'm going to start rolling up the various hub sections, which represent the views, the little panels that we were scrolling our way through. And there are 5 hub sections inside of the hub control. Again, at the very top, there is this grid that has the name of layout root. Do you remember where you heard that from? We talked about that pretty early on, that many of the templates and previous versions of the phone's software development kit had this notion of a layout root, and its purpose is just, this is where you do your work. This is where you lay out your controls, as opposed to, you know, maybe the app's header and the page title that appear above it. But at any rate, the hub serves that purpose. It will give you this header property, which allows you to enter the application's name, and so on. And then the individual hub sections also have headers. And that's what we saw section 1, section 2 when we ran the app. And let me just pull this back over so you can see this little section 1 here. That word comes from the header. The hub itself, it has a header that's set to application name. Some of it can't be seen off to the right hand side. Also, another interesting thing about the designer, when you put your mouse cursor in a given hub section, you can see how it changes the designer on the left hand side. All right. So if we wanted to make some changes to the layout of the various items for section number 5, we would then put our mouse cursor there. We can see the visual representation in the designer and then go about editing the templates, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Okay, let me roll that back up. So again, at a high level, you have a hub control. Hub control has a number of child hub sections. And if you take a look at the source of the hub, it really breaks down into 2 main pieces. There is the data that we want displayed inside of each of the hub sections, and then the layout of that data. So there's the data and the layout, or the templates that represent how that data will be displayed to the end user, right? So let's take a look at one of those hub sections, which gives us the layout for the data. And you can see there's a lot going on here. First of all, a hub section has a data template. So inside of this, this is the template for how the data will be displayed on that given hub section. And it uses a grid view to lay out all the individual items. Now, specifically, you can see here that the items panel uses this items wrap grid. So the items panel template uses this items wrap grid. What does that mean? It basically will position each child element sequentially from top to bottom. And then when elements fall off the bottom, it will then move to the next column and then start to represent things from top to bottom, then left to right, so to speak. So when we run the app again, and we're looking at hub section number 2, I believe is where we were, notice that item 1 is displayed first, then item 2 below it. Now, item 3 can't fit, and so it will be moved to the next column, then below it, item 4. Item 5 can't be fit below it, so it's moved to a new column off to the right-hand side as well, like so, okay? And that is the handiwork of this items wrap grid. So this dictates how all the items will flow, but not the layout for the individual item itself. What dictates the fact that, for example, we see this large image and then below it a title with some padding between them and not a lot of padding. It's kind of deceptive because in this current layout, it looks like this title belongs to this image because there's no padding or margin in between the two. And we could refine that. This is just, again, a sample layout. But what dictates then the layout for each individual item? Well, that's the job of, as we can see here, the item template property of the grid view. It's set to a static resource called standard 200 by 180 tile item template. So we've seen static resources before, right? To define the settings for a given property of a control. In this case, we're using a static resource as the item template for each individual item that our data will be displayed into. And where is this found? If we go back to the top of the page, page.resources, if we open that up, you can see the very first item here has the key standard 280 by 180 tile item template. Awesome. So it's a data template specifically for one item. Each item will then be displayed in a grid. This grid will be have a width of 180 and it'll have two rows. In the first row, you'll see the image itself, which were just these dummy gray images, right? Different shades of gray, which are available here. You can see like this light gray, this medium gray, this, I think there's a dark gray here. Okay, so again, these are not images we'll want to ship with our final product, just placeholder images for our dummy data, all right? But at any rate, there's a border that wraps around this image. I'm not really sure what the border is there for. I guess if the image doesn't load correctly or if you want to kind of center the image and allow there to be a little border around the outside. I haven't really investigated that all that much, quite honestly. And then below that, but you, let me start off by saying that you can see that is set into grid.row 0. So it's into this first row. And then there's a text block below it that's set into grid.row equals 1. And so when we, again, run the app, think two rows per data item. Row 1 has the border with the image inside of it. In this case, the various shades of gray. And then in the second row, the actual text block. And now, where's this data coming from? Well, we'll get to that in just a moment. But that's how each individual item is laid out. Then each individual item is arranged, as we said earlier, from this items panel template. We used an items wrap grid to create that effect of item 1, item 2, item 3, item 4, item 5, right? All right, if we go back up here to the data template, again, this is what lays out each individual item. We see that there is an image with a source property set to this binding expression. So we've seen different binding expressions before, like static resource is the one that we've looked at up to this point. This is binding to a data property called image path, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. The text blocks text is bound to a different property of a given object, of the item object. The title property. And there are quite a few other properties here. And for the most part, I'm going to ignore many of these as we go throughout the series. But let me address it right up front. If I don't talk about a specific property, generally you can figure out the context by the context what that property is doing. So for example, typography.capitals equals small caps. What could that possibly mean? Well, as I look at, for example, this item title 1, and I see that the text is set to the property title, I'm going to guess that the dummy data that makes up all the items in this template, it will have, one of the items will have the text item title colon 1. And notice that it uses a series of capitals for the typography. So the capital I, let me move off this, capital I, then lowercase capital T-E-M. So they're not using the lower case, but a smaller capital case. And I would assume that's what this property, get back up here, where are we? This property, typography.capital small caps. So a lot of this I can figure out based on what I see in the designer window or when I run the app. There are other things that are less obvious. And so is text scale factor enabled? What in the world does that mean? I'll be honest with you. I looked it up a couple of days ago when I was originally compiling my notes for this, and I've already forgotten that. But it wouldn't be very difficult for me to copy this property, paste it into my favorite search engine and do a search for that property to see what it will really do for me. Or I can just kind of change it from false to true and see what change that makes. And it doesn't really make anything visually here. Maybe it has something to do with the scale factor for a smaller form factor phone or a larger tablet or maybe a whole desktop. All right. Again, I don't know. I'm going to set this back to its original value. I'll look it up if I need to. But if I don't address something in this series, do your own detective work. This is important. This is how you learn how to manipulate the given templates and how to kind of fine-tune things in order to get it to do what you want. Is when you encounter something you don't know what it does, stop right there, take 5 seconds, Control C, copy, open up a web browser, paste it in, hit search. It'll probably bring up an MSDN article. Read that, see an example, it'll show you a picture. Problem solved. All right, so that's just what I would encourage you to do as we go throughout the series. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about navigation. We have seen how we were able to navigate by clicking on either an individual group or an individual item to the respective pages, whether the section page or the item page. So how does that work? Well, if you take a look at, for example, since we're here in Hub Section 2, let's just stay here for a moment. There are a couple of properties that make this happen. Actually, they're all grouped together right here. First of all, selection mode equals none, is item click enabled equal true, and then the item click equals item view underscore item click. All right, so setting the selection mode to none means that we're not allowing the individual items to be selected as if they were in a list of items that we were selecting for inclusion in some operation. Instead, we want to allow the user to click a given item to perform a navigation operation. So setting the is item click enabled equal to true instructs the grid view how we want to trigger an event called item click, not a selection event called item selected, and we want it to be for the item to be clicked because we want something to be triggered, something to be to happen after that tap event. And so there's a semantic difference between a selection and a tap, and that is what this property allows us to differentiate between, how we want the item in the list to react to a tap. Select, or do we want it to actually register as a click, as a one-time event that will trigger something to happen, all right? And so then, what do we want to be fired off when that event is raised, when the click event is raised? We want this item view underscore item click event to be raised, or to be handled with this particular event handler. Right, so I'm going to right-click it and select Go to Definition. That'll bring us to the hubpage.xaml.cs in a preview tab. And so based on our explanation of navigation up to this point, you know, we would have expected to see this frame.navigate to be employed, and it is. Great. But notice that we're passing in not only the name of the page or the type that we want to create a new instance of and set to the frame's current, you know, object that it's going to be displaying in its frame, but we're also passing in an item ID. Where does that item ID come from? What does it represent? Well, here we see the first mention of a class of data that represents data. So we will have a sample data item, and it represents one item in our list. So again, going back here, it's going to represent one of these guys as opposed to one of these guys. Not groups, items. All right. So we need to find the current item that was clicked on, and that would be passed to us through the item click event args. And one of the things that we can do with the item event click of args is to determine which item was clicked, and then we'll cast that to an instance of our class called sample data item. We'll talk about sample data item in a little while, maybe not even in this lesson, but essentially it is the class that represents item. It'll have things like title, subtitle, the location of the image, you know, in our assets folder, and so on as properties. All right, so once we've determined which item was clicked on and we cast it to an instance of sample data item, now we can retrieve properties from that sample data item. It has a property called unique ID, which we will then use to say, okay, the user clicked on, now let's run it and talk through this one more time to make it obvious, painfully obvious. All right, user wants to look at item number 4. Now, how do we ensure that the item that the user will tap on is the item that will be loaded up into this itempage.xaml? Well, that's the mechanism that we're looking at right here, and that's how that happens. All right. So the next step is fairly simple. We're going to navigate to the itempage.xaml page, passing in the ID of the item that we want displayed on that page. So let's go ahead and open up the itempage.xaml.cs. Now, based on our understanding of the navigation model and how we can retrieve the object that was passed from one page to the next, we might think we know what happens on the itempage.xaml. We would expect to handle the onNavigatedTo event method like we've done before. However, if we were to look through this, at least at first glance, in the itempage.xaml.cs file, you'll find no such method declared. Actually, if you were to pop open this little section here, that this region that's been rolled up, we do in fact find onNavigatedTo hidden and tucked away in there. And the fact of the matter is that something kind of strange is going on here. There's a helper class that was created for the express purpose of this example, for the Hub App project template, to handle navigation. In fact, if we scroll back up near the top, you can see here that we have a private read-only navigation helper. And then here in the constructor for the page, you can see here that we have this new instance of navigation helper created, passing in an instance of this, so that would represent the item page. And then we begin to wire up some events that are defined by the navigation helper class, presumably, that we're going to handle. So we would expect to give the navigation handler a reference to us, to the item page, and then it will start calling methods that are defined inside of this class, like helper navigation load state, helper navigation helper rather save state, and so on. All right, so we're basically going to say whenever the navigation helper fires off this method, this event, we want to handle it with this event handler method that we've defined here. Furthermore, if we look at the very bottom here, we notify our instance of navigation helper every time we've been navigated to and navigated from. So we're including the navigation helper in every operation that has anything to do with navigation. We say, hey, we're navigated to, and then the navigation helper says, okay, I'll take it from here. Okay, I've done some stuff. You need to execute the load state method now. And at which point it loads it. It performs that, or you need to perform the save state now. Okay, so where's this navigation helper defined in our project? Again, I want to emphasize that this is a helper class that was created by Microsoft for the express purpose of the Hub App project template, and that it's not part of the phone's API itself. And if we take a look at the common folder, you can see that there's this navigationhelper.cs. And you can take a few moments to just read through all this explanation about what it does, how to wire it up correctly, like if, for example, on any given page, this is how you would you know, form your constructor. These are the methods you'll need to implement. And then here again, this is what you're going to need to do on the unnavigated to and unnavigated from. You need to keep this navigation helper in the loop as these navigation related methods start to happen. Okay, and then the rest is implementation that I definitely don't want to talk about. In a nutshell, it basically handles state management for you and allows users to return to the exact page in your app where they left off in their previous session. I'd recommend that you not make any changes to this class. Spend some time reading through what it does and how to wire it all up correctly. Obviously, this has been done for us already, all the constructor code, the load state, save state methods that have been registered, and then the calls from unnavigated to and unnavigated from back into our instance of navigation helper in order to keep it in the loop whenever navigation happens. Okay, so I want to stop right there for now. There are many other features of the Hub App Project Template that we're going to learn about in the following lessons. In this lesson, I primarily focused on the templating of the hub control and then the navigation technique that's employed here using the navigation helper. In the next lesson, we're going to learn about the sample data and how the various templates bind to it for display. And we'll see you in the next lesson. Thank you.